Yeah, I'm on time today. I'm on time today. I was late last Sunday, wasn't I? Good morning to you. Welcome to Sunday View. Are you well? Thanks for joining me. It is Sunday morning, the 20th of January, 2019. My name is Richie Allen. It's terrific to be with you. Sunday View. I'll be looking through the Sunday newspapers, of course, as usual, and we'll have an in-depth look at one or two of the stories inside the papers as well. Between now and the end of the programme, you can tweet the programme. It's very simple. It's at Richie Allen Show. Thanks for joining me. I know I've already said that. Let's do it.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yes, Sunday View it is then, with me, Richie Allen, going to be with you till the top of the next hour as usual. Just something you'd like to tell me, do it on Twitter. Let's just crack on with the show. Yeah, I've not got my theme tune dialed in there, so there you are. Who needs theme tunes? Who needs them this Sunday morning? I don't need them, that's for sure. Before I go any further, pretty grim this morning, pretty grim. It's grim in South Manchester, pretty dull. But I really enjoyed my run this morning. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Had a personal best time today. Thrilled with that. 7 kilometres I run with the dog. Not always going to be with the dog going forward as she's getting older and is not up for the runs, but pretty happy with that this morning. And I want to say a massive hello to Harvey Wood, whose daughter Jo got in touch with me to say, would I give him a shout out? He's on Twitter, at Real Harvey Wood. Give him a shout out, Richie, and tell him, thanks for the car, will you? Says Jo. Thanks for the car, Harvey. So presumably when I leave the studio and I go downstairs and I leave the front door, there'll be a car waiting for me. No, apparently it's a car that he gave Jo. Of course. Thanks for listening, Harvey. Thanks for the shout out. Joe, appreciate that. Hope you have a lovely Sunday. The pair of you. Hope you appreciate your old dad giving you a car. Hey, hope you appreciate your old dad. Let's just jump into the stories then. A few things. Look, there is a Brexit roundup. There is every Sunday. There's no escaping it. It's everywhere. No matter where you go. And that old adage, that old cliche of people are talking about it on the streets. Ordinarily, when people say that, it's bull spit. But they are. People are talking about it. I'm out and about. I hear people talking about it. Seriously, I hear neighbours talking about this nonsense. I wonder, are they beginning to see through the charade? I wonder. Let's start with the Sunday Times. May in meltdown, screams the headline. May in meltdown. Is she? What's May in meltdown about? As if you didn't know. I'll read you some of this. The Times is a subscription based on... Well, it's you can buy the print edition of The Times, of course. But it is subscription if you want to read it online. Think they might give you a couple of articles free every week. I'm not sure. I subscribe to all of them, obviously, for the purposes of this show. So I'll read you some of it. Theresa May's government is facing meltdown today, as The Sunday Times reveals how a senior House of Commons official helped rebel MPs who are plotting to derail Brexit. Now, this is getting most coverage today on telly, on radio. This is the one, this particular story. A senior House of Commons official helping rebel MPs plotting to derail Brexit. Subterfuge, dark corridors, footsteps and whispers. That's what's happening. The Sunday Times has managed to get a hold of emails. Emails that show that Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General, has been in secret communications with a man called Colin Lee, whom you've never heard of. Colin Lee is the Clerk of Bills. And Grieve has been conspiring with Colin Lee with the explicit intention of suspending Britain's departure from the European Union. That's the bombshell story on the front page of the Sunday Times today. So what's gone on? Well, the Clerk of Bills, Colin Lee, drew up 3 versions of the plan for Grieve, the plan to stop the UK leaving. He drew up 3 plans for Grieve. each of which would overturn centuries of parliamentary precedent. Now, we talked about this a lot, how parliamentary precedent has been swept aside by the Speaker, John Bercow, and others, right? So, three versions of the plan to stop Brexit were given by Colin Lee, Clerk of Bills, whom most people have never heard of, to Dominic Grieve, Tory MP, former Attorney General. But then, Colin Lee swore Dominic Grieve to secrecy. Now, Dominic, don't be telling anybody that we had these meetings, right? Right. But, or we exchanged these emails. But the emails are now in the public domain. This revelation came as Prime Minister's Plan B, Theresa May's Plan B to salvage her Brexit deal can be disclosed. It's been reported this morning that to get around this backstop thing, Theresa May wants to offer a bilateral treaty to Ireland that would remove the backstop from the EU withdrawal treaty. However, the Irish are saying this morning, well, faith and begarin, be Jesus, you know. The Irish are saying it's not going to work. That's the Irish, as in Ireland, not Northern Ireland. So, May's Chief of Staff, Gavin Barwell, has told two Cabinet Ministers that if May's Plan B falls apart, which it probably will, she might offer her resignation, basically. May might basically go in the month of May. So there you go. So footsteps and whispers in Parliament. People, the Clerk of Bills, Colin Lee, drawing up plans for the shadow, well, not the shadow, the former Attorney General, Dominic Grieve, to stop Brexit. It's all going on. As the Sunday Times says, two different groups of rebels will table amendments to be debated on January 29th that will seek to allow backbench MPs to take control of Commons business and force through their own legislation. This is the washing away of centuries of precedent. Backbench MPs getting to take over the business of government. It's unheard of, really. But it's happening. People like Yvette Cooper, Nick Bowles, Hilary Benn trying to take over the government business. This has been called a coup in the papers today, not just in the Sunday Times. The press has labelled this a constitutional coup. They want to put a no-deal Brexit basically off the table. They want to get rid of the notion of leaving on March 29th with no deal. The plan by these plotters would need the support of 300 MPs, not even a majority, as long as the MPs come from five different parties. They're calling this a coup. The Sunday Times has been passed emails between Dominic Grieve and Colin Lee showing that the Clerk of Bills assisted the rebels to draw up all of these plans. That's the massive story in the Sunday Times today, right? Keep that in mind. We'll be hearing from Hilary Benn and Anna Soubry in a minute. So a coup. We're backbench MPs. MPs not in ministerial roles either, in government ministerial roles or shadow government ministerial roles, basically coming together, working to stop Article 50, to either suspend it, to take no deal off the table, and or to get a second referendum. Basically, all of these crossbench MPs coming together to stop Brexit full stop. And doing so by changing centuries of parliamentary precedence. You understand this, right? It makes sense? Okay. Front page of The Observer. Defiant Bercow set to stay as Speaker. This is a report in The Observer that Bercow is considering abandoning his plans to step down as Commons Speaker. Why? Well, because it was reported in the news last week that he was going to be denied a peerage after he left. Bercow, you see, believed, like all of them that went before him, that he'd get a lovely cushy job in the Lords. Not a job, really. The Lords is where you go to drink, to sleep, to snore, and to fart your way through the rest of your life, and you get paid £300 for doing it. It's my Sunday afternoon without the £300. That's what it's like being in the... I don't snore and I don't fart that much, but I do tend to fall asleep of a Sunday afternoon, couple of beers in me, and that's the House of Lords. But you get, as I said, you get £300 a day for it. Lovely, isn't it? I'd give anything for a peerage. So Berko is up to his neck with, he's in it up to his neck, I should say, with respect to stopping Brexit. He's behind the scenes manipulating these little deals, footsteps and whispers, as I said. He's an odious little dude, isn't he, Berko? Isn't he? Order! The Prime Minister will be heard! Order! The Sunday Telegraph, MP plotters risk political tsunami, warns Fox. Samantha Fox writing in the... No, it's not Samantha Fox and her big boobies. It's Liam Fox writing for The Telegraph. The International Trade Secretary warns that failing to deliver on the 2016 referendum would open up a yawning gap between voters and Parliament. Do you remember that, Sam Fox? Touch me, I want to feel your body. Right, so Liam Fox is saying that if we don't deliver on this, there's going to be a massive divide between ordinary people like you and me and Parliament. That basically goes without further description from me. Fox is saying we have to leave. Fox has been telling the media this morning, but I couldn't record it because it was too close to airtime. But basically people voted to leave. Not for any deal or any shenanigans, just to leave. Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of the Conservatives' parliamentary party in the Commons, has also warned that the European Union has run rings around British negotiators. Sir Graham Brady basically summing it up, that the EU negotiators have made the UK team look like a bunch of monkeys fucking a football. Got that from Days of Thunder. And he's basically saying, Sir Graham Brady, we look like a bunch of morons. 50 Tory Association chairmen and other senior grassroots figures have also written to The Telegraph as well, saying that May promised all along that no deal was better than a bad deal. And that pledge should be honoured, basically. No deal should be honoured. Like I said, Liam Fox was on the Mar show earlier, didn't get him too close to air. It's the great Brexit betrayal, the great coup, isn't it? And all very easily predicted, not because of any soothsaying abilities by yours truly, but I knew it. I'm an Irishman. We've lived through it twice. There's no leaving the European Union. The elite, the hidden hand, whatever you want to call them, it is a massive pillar of their future plans for humanity. The ability to be able to control hundreds of millions of people through manipulating a half a dozen people or 50 people or 60 people. That's how it works. Concentrating power in the hands of a small group of people, it's easier to control those people than it is hundreds of millions. Therefore, nobody can leave, right? Right. Hillary Benn, you can't get that Samantha Fox image out of your head now, can you? Hillary Benn, Labour backbencher, one of the orchestrators of the coup, is not happy at being called a plotter. He was on the Andrew Marr show this morning. He's not happy. You'll hear Hillary Benn, and then you'll hear Anna Soubry, the Tory.
Well, MPs doing their job, Andrew, are not plotters. They are trying to sort out the mess that the Prime Minister has created. We are facing a national crisis. And there are many MPs in the House of Commons whose first priority is to ensure that we do not leave without a deal. And therefore, finding ways when we come to table amendments this week and debate on the 29th of January, how we stop that if the Prime Minister won't listen to the call she's having from all quarters in all parties to stop a no-deal Brexit, then MPs have to do the job if the Prime Minister is not capable of doing so. Can I also say that to attack House of Commons clerks and suggest they're part of a conspiracy is a disgrace? Our clerks are resolutely impartial. They act with complete integrity. And when MPs go to them and say, I'd like to do this, can you advise me on how to do it? That's the advice they give. And we really cannot get into a situation where people are suggesting that the clerks of the House of Commons are doing anything improper. They too are doing their job.
Yeah. Anna Soubry, why do you think, how is it that we know what the clerks are thinking? Do you think?
I don't know, but it is exceptionally concerning because my understanding is that this is a quite proper exchange of emails between Dominic Grieve and a clerk who, as Hillary says, is doing their job. They always give members of Parliament impartial advice. And we need to know on what basis that has been put into the public arena. Remember, Dominic is also the chairman of the Security Committee. And if it turns out that his emails have been hacked, and I don't see any other way because it seems inconceivable that it would have been shared, But we really have to stop this narrative. This is not people plotting, as Hillary quite rightly says. This is people doing their job because of a profound failing by government. And if government won't do its job, then Parliament has to take this back. And if I may say, I think your viewers are fed up with all these half-baked conspiracy theories. They're fed up with Brexit. They're wanting to know what our solutions are. And working together is actually a good thing.
Mar is very weak there. He should have hammered Soubry. Don't ever tell me, don't ever come on my show and tell me what's going on. Don't ever tell me how to present my show. Don't tell me or my producers how to create our show. You do what you're told. You're here to answer the questions, Soubry. So answer the fucking questions. He's incredibly weak there, is Mar. I've been a broadcaster, presenter, producer for years and years and years. When somebody unfairly and wrongly takes you on and accuses you as a presenter of doing something you haven't done, you have to destroy them. It's as simple as that. But you know, in light of what went on Question Time on Thursday with the Labour Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott and Fiona Bruce, I reckon the BBC are terrified now when they're dealing with female guests. He should have nailed Soubry. Don't come on here telling me about what our listeners want. Answer the questions, love. And answer them properly. It is a plot and it is a coup. The former Education Secretary, Nicky Morgan, she's a Conservative MP, of course, was on Sky News with Sophie Ridge earlier on. Sophie Ridge posed the same question. Is it a coup? Are we witnessing a coup in Westminster over Brexit? Nicky Morgan.
Well, I think as other MPs have said, it's a strange sort of coup that starts with a whole bunch of democratically elected members of Parliament. And this is, it is unprecedented for backbenchers' business to take precedence over government business. But it is very much confined to one particular issue, Brexit. It's to my immense regret that, unfortunately, Brexit appears to be the only thing that we're able to discuss at the moment. Of course, it's important, but I think many people watching this are desperate for their politicians and government to talk about other issues. And frankly, I think the MPs are also very keen to talk about other issues, many of which you know are very challenging, many of which led to the Brexit result in 2016 anyway. I think what this is MPs saying on this particular issue, we think there is a different way forward, and we particularly want to make sure there is not a no-deal outcome to Brexit. But the government will carry on, and government will carry on governing, and they'll have ministers in other departments doing other things. So I think to describe it as a coup is overblown.
It is a coup, love. It is the very definition of a coup. People voted to leave. Not for any deal, mind, but to leave. Not only that, all of you motherfuckers, when you campaigned in your constituencies back in 2017, the last time we had a general election, you all campaigned on the promise that you would deliver Brexit. So of course it's a coup. It's a coup and nothing else. Still can't get Samantha Fox out of your head, can you? You just can't get it out of your head, Samantha Fox. Remember that? This is the night. I used to rewind that over and over and over again. Just that first bit there as a young prepubescent boy. Give over now, Richie. Right. Sophie Ridge, back to Nicky Morgan. Sophie Ridge then pointed out to Nicky Morgan, and to every other Remainer, that staying in a single market, customs union, but single market, staying in some sort of single market arrangement with the European Union means that you will have to allow the free movement of people from other EU countries here. And that's just a fact, and Sophie Ridge makes that point pretty strongly to Morgan.
So I'm keen to talk about the kind of Brexit that you are supporting, this idea of staying quite close to the single market in a customs union. Let's get real. There's no way the EU would allow that without the UK also accepting free movement of people. That is right, isn't it? Let's just admit it.
Well, I think, I mean, look,
The pause is to prepare for the inevitable lie that follows. Ridge is spot on. There's no point in asking them these questions. Journalism is going to have to change. Presenting is going to have to change. I don't want presenters, particularly in national media, to be constantly giving their viewers and listeners their opinions. I don't want that necessarily. But in this instance, Ridge shouldn't be saying, isn't it, isn't it? Ridge should be doubling down and saying, it is. Don't lie, don't obfuscate. You know full well that staying in these arrangements means that people will be able to travel freely to the UK, which was more than problematic for the majority of working class people in this country. So, you know, Morgan pauses and delivers the inevitable bullshit.
That Common Market 2.0, which is the option that I am supporting, if you would be part of EFTA, part of the single market, then yes, freedom of movement comes with that. But there are mechanisms and there are ways to apply for there to be control. And actually, I think that the British public have got a far more nuanced understanding and interest in immigration than
has Theresa May read it wrong, then?
Credit for.
Has Theresa May read it wrong?
Well, I think that the Prime Minister... Well, I think the Prime Minister, given her Home Secretary background, has always said that freedom of movement is important. It's what people want. There's no doubt some people voted in 2016 to leave the EU because of concerns around immigration. But there are lots and lots of controls on immigration, who's coming here, how long they're coming here for, why they're coming here, that actually UK governments over the years could have exercised much, much more than they chose to. And
actually difficult to argue with that point made by Nicky Morgan. The legislation, the laws have been there historically, but they haven't been implemented or enforced. Again, the question is why, right? Sophie Ridge is not going there.
And actually, Sajid Javid's plans on immigration begin to take the UK in that direction. If you go to the EU countries, as someone who's going to live there for, you know, 6 months, a couple of years, whatever, people have to register, they have to tell the local, whether it's police forces or others, that they're there and everything else. We don't do nearly enough of that.
Well,
do you know what?
Do you know what? I lived in Spain for years. In Spain, you are obliged, when you live in Spain, when you move there permanently, you are obliged to pop around to the ayuntamiento and register and say, look, I'm Richie Allen, I'm here now, I'm based here now. But people don't do that, and there's very little the Spanish can do about it. So that's just bollocks by Nicky Morgan. Staying in any sort of single market arrangement with the European Union will mean that free movement from European Union countries to the UK will not end. We're nearly done with Brexit, don't panic. And I've got some really interesting stuff coming up. 21 and a half minutes past the hour. Hi to Ian McKee. How you doing, Ian? Hi to Martin in Spain. David tweets, no deal doesn't mean no deal for the UK. It means no deal for the EU. No sanctioned and agreed to booty call. Oh, these insidious remain pawns, says David. David Conis says, Richie, best make that second referendum an electronic event just to ensure the accuracy of the result. Good point, mate. Good point. Good morning to Base Ninja. Good morning to Gail. Good morning to Moinga. Cypherdine tweets, I remember Sam Fox strip poker on the Amiga 500, Richie. It made every 14-year-old boy a card shark. Happy days, he says. Maybe that was the whole point of it. Drawing boys into playing poker on computers, maybe, eh? Maybe. Loads of tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter in Twitter and you'll see what other people are tweeting to me. Neil Gardner tweets, expect the government to announce a new mental health initiative to tackle the causes of anti-globalist populism. Maybe. Maybe. 23 minutes past the hour. Worse has been envisaged. Worse was laughed at and ridiculed for being a conspiracy theory, only to come true in the end. Sunday Express, front page, they will do anything to stop Brexit. Sunday Express, front page, they will do anything to stop Brexit. Self-explanatory, eh? Very self-explanatory. On that, the stopping of Brexit, what about the consequences for politics, political parties, and people's faith in the process? I find this very interesting. Ella Whelan, journalist and author, was on Sky News this morning and she pulled no punches in criticising Labour MPs and Tory Remainers for subverting the democratic result. Journalist and author Ella Whelan, this is good stuff.
We have a party that runs under Corbyn under the slogan for the many, not the few. which is directly, it's MPs are directly voting against the many's wishes in support of the few, the elite. I mean, you have, I think what Labour MPs and many Tory MPs don't seem to understand is that your average voter, like my dad or my mum or anyone out on the street, doesn't have connections in with knowing what's going on in the civil service, doesn't get to make TV programmes about Brexit, doesn't get to write articles, doesn't get to go into Parliament. They have no voice apart from putting that X in that box. And in people who are supporting a second referendum want to remove that only engagement in politics that ordinary people have. I don't think they quite have wrapped their heads around how damaging that will be for democracy. And it, no Labour MP or Tory will ever be able to claim to represent working people if they push for this second referendum. We were talking about part of me wants them to do it just so I can say, right, we're never trusting you again. Mm. On the other hand, it would be the end of kind of politics and democracy as we know it.
Yeah. Ella Whelan, I wonder, and this is something I wonder quite regularly, how many of those who have regular gigs in the mainstream media, you know, people who do newspaper reviews and stuff like that, people who've got other jobs, right? Other jobs, day jobs. They're not presenters or journalists per se, but they're invited to come on BBC and Sky often enough as a talking head. I wonder how many of those people, for them, the penny is dropping now. How many of them are finally starting to get it that they not only do not know, but never have lived in a democratic state, that they have been fooled, that for their entire lives they've been conned into believing that true power lies with the people. It does, of course, ultimately, but only if people get off their arses. But are they now starting to understand just how cynical, and cynical is a very benign word, how mendacious, how corrupt, how evil the system is? It's dawning on them. You could hear it in Ella Whelan's voice there. She's getting it. The follow-up question needs to be for these people is, how far does it go? And ultimately then, what do we do about it? Right? Interesting stuff. We are going to leave Brexit. You'll be glad to hear that. When I come back, I want to chat for a few minutes about toxic masculinity, maybe. We'll talk a bit about that, we will. And also the Holocaust industry has reared its pretty annoying head on UK media this morning, so we'll talk about the Holocaust industry as well. I don't see any reason why not. We might talk about 97-year-old drivers. There are still one or two newspaper front pages to do as well. And this is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Good morning, how you doing? Are you well? Nothing like this on UK media today. Nothing anywhere. He says arrogantly, this is Texas with Inner Smile, back with more in 3 minutes. Yeah, I love Charlene, top class. That is Texas on the Richie Allen Show, Inner Smile. The time is approaching 11:30. Of course, if you're listening to the repeat or the podcast or whatever, it won't be 11:30. Well, it might be, depending on where you are in the world. You can still tweet the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I didn't get into this last week. It happened towards the end of the week, and there's so much of it, you know, identity politics, isn't there? There's so much gender politics, identity politics, male, female stuff, that it just gets a bit tiresome. But I was interested in the Gillette story. So I want to talk about that Gillette story. Before I do, I just have to quickly round up the rest of the front pages. Just dawned on me. We haven't done the rest of them. The Mail on Sunday, lovely, large headline in bold type, warned by police for no seatbelt. What a fucking joke this is, eh? The Duke of Edinburgh, evil on two spindly legs. Evil on two spindly, wasted legs. 97 years of age. This fuckwit drove onto a main road without looking and nearly killed people. Just drove straight on to, I mean, it happened to me this 5-6 months ago. As you know, my old Ford Focus estate was written off by some batshit crazy woman who flew onto Wilmslow Road and smashed into the side of me, nearly killed me. No exaggeration, just drove on. Why not? Fuck the stop sign, who needs them? Anyway, Philip just drives onto a road, nearly kills people in another car. And neither Philip nor anyone representing him has reached out to the people they nearly killed. But then again, this is an evil bastard who said he'd like to come back as a virus to kill more people. This is an evil sicko who was undoubtedly implicated in the murder even, of the Princess of Wales. This guy was a Nazi sympathiser whose sisters married Nazis, who went to the funerals of Nazis. And the people whom he nearly killed are surprised that he didn't say, "Hey, are you all right by any chance?" The prick was out driving again yesterday with no seatbelt. What the fuck? Ah! Evil on two spindly legs. The Sunday Mirror. Same story. As I said, people that he nearly killed have spoken out. Prince Philip hasn't even said sorry, is the headline on the Sunday Mirror. Emma Fairweather, whose arm was broken by the dickhead, she was the passenger in the other car, she said, "It's been so traumatic and painful. I would have expected more of the royal family. You're lucky they didn't kill you, love, to be honest." To be honest with you, if his security detail were following him, you might have been murdered and then buried somewhere. Sick bastards they are. Anyway, that's the papers. That's the papers. Right. 97, huh? You ageist bastard, Richie. No, I'm not. I'm not ageist. Every driver in the world, no matter how careful he or she is, will occasionally make a mistake, and I'm no stranger to that. I have made occasional mistakes while driving over the years. Thankfully, none of those mistakes resulted in an accident. I suppose I was blessed. When you get to that age, fucking hell. Anyway, 26 minutes to the top of the hour. Evil on spindly legs. Thanks to Cartoon Drunk for the very funny picture he's just sent to me there. Thank you, David. I've retweeted that, of course. Gail says the resemblance between Burns, as in Montgomery Burns, from The Simpsons, that would be C. Montgomery Burns, is uncanny between Burns and the Duke of Edinburgh. There certainly is a resemblance there, Gail. I'll give you that. Right, shall we talk about Gillette then? It's been a rather frenetic Sunday View, hasn't it? So, what's it called again? I can't remember. Hang on. Because I took a story from a magazine this morning. What magazine did I use? Ah, I used Salon magazine. Salon.com. So they're covering it. This Gillette story is still in the news. And Salon has written this article with the headline, "Razor Burned. Why Gillette's campaign against toxic masculinity missed the mark. Who knew a razor blade company could become so controversial," writes Salon.com. So Gillette has launched this new marketing campaign. You know this now because the story's a few days old. The best men can be, with this advertisement which has been watched billions of times. Very clever. I'm not saying the ad is very clever, but if the Gillette people knew this would be controversial, it's very clever. There's no such thing as bad publicity. So the ad begins by depicting boys bullying other boys, women being harassed and catcalled, and a group of men excusing all of it as boys will be boys. Gillette then asks if this is the best a man can get. The rest of the ad portrays men pushing back against other men's bad behaviour. Salon.com says it has been polarising, to say the least. The campaign is being praised by some people for tackling masculine stereotypes and challenging men to be better. However, on the other side, some are saying that Gillette risks turning off customers who think the brand is shamelessly capitalising on the Me Too movement and practising leftist politics. There are already calls for the brand to be boycotted. Not the first time, though, that, what would you call it, cosmetic product manufacturers have dipped a toe into gender politics. Just For Men, you might remember this, dear listener, launched its Better Man campaign in October of last year, which encouraged men to be more compassionate and caring. In 2014, Dove Men and Care launched its Care Makes a Man Stronger campaign to explore the different ways that men define masculinity. There was a very good debate on RT over the weekend. Very good debate. RT does some good stuff. We know that. We know that. Steve Malzberg is a conservative commentator and television presenter. Always good for a soundbite is Steve. And Joanne Morales is from an organisation called New Nude. And she's very interested in diversity and the discussion of diversity. So you'll hear Steve Malzberg and Joanne Morales having a bit of a debate. It's good stuff, this. About 2 minutes, 20 seconds long. Have a listen. Two different points of view. And let me know what you think. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Thanks to RT for this.
Why is that a bad thing to highlight the best way, the best version of yourself, whether you're male or you're a female? What's wrong with highlighting the best version of you? What's wrong with inspiring men to be the best men version that they can be? I don't see anything wrong with that. And I think they should carry on doing adverts like this.
This video shows the masses of men as evil and the few trying to stop them. And by the way, boys will be boys. There's nothing wrong with young boys getting into scuffles with other young boys. I did it in my youth. All my friends did it. We grew up just fine. These days, if a boy, you know, puts six years old, kisses a girl on the cheek innocently, he's suspended from school. He has a blot on his record for life. If he goes like this, bang, bang, in a schoolyard, maybe, you know, innocently at 5 or 6 years old, he's suspended. This is crazy stuff.
Of course, there will be some boys that will be boys, but what does that mean? What does it mean? Are we allowing men to always have fights in the street? Are we condoning it? Is it okay? Boys are boys, so it's okay to fight. It's okay to do this. In UK, especially with knife crime being at such a high rate, are we condoning it by saying, oh, no, it's okay. Boys will be boys. Like, it's okay to be violent. It's okay to be aggressive. No, it's okay to not be aggressive. It doesn't affect your masculinity. It doesn't demean your masculinity. And if you are threatened by this advert, if your masculinity is threatened, then you have to question what masculinity means to you.
How dare Gillette be so presumptive and presumptuous as to imply that men are evil by nature and boys are evil by nature and need them to lecture to us males. Otherwise, they're going to turn into homophobes and beat people up and rape people and abuse people. This is insanity gone nuts.
I completely disagree and think it's absolutely fantastic. They're focusing on the positives. There's actually always a lot of people that generalize men for being sexual predators or for being negative with their attitudes. But in fact, this advert from Gillette is focusing on the positives. There is actually, in fact, some men out there doing the right thing.
It presents as if the majority of men are being stopped and you know, by these few good men who somehow overcame their evil masculinity at birth and they've developed into the keepers of the bad majority of men who are masculine. The overwhelming majority of men by nature are good and do the right thing.
Can't argue with that. The overwhelming majority of anybody is usually pretty decent. You know, whether it's men, women or children, usually decent, regardless of their religious views, regardless of where they came from, and regardless of their sexual orientation. The vast majority of people are all right, you know. It's been my experience. I've been lucky enough to have travelled quite a bit in the 44 years that I've been on Planet of the Apes, as Maria Heller calls it, my great pal. And I just find decent people wherever I go. What happened to the strong, silent type? Gary Cooper. Never forget the scene in The Sopranos when Dr. Melfi is speaking to Tony Soprano very early on. And he's kind of thinking about men being men when men, according to him anyway, when men could deal with things without melting down and crying and needing therapy and medication. And he invoked the memory of the Gary Cooper movies. I might have mentioned this before. I remember noticing. Now, this is true. When I say something, it's true anyway, at least as I understand it, right? At least as I understand it. I remember noticing in the early 2000s. So in the early 2000s, I was 26, 27 years old. And I had hair. I don't think it was great hair, but I had here. God be with the days. Tall, devilishly handsome. Yeah, enough of that old bollocks, Richie. Early 2000s, a strange thing started happening. And it's endured. It has endured. I think its genesis was about 16, 17 years ago. Men began dressing effeminately. Meaning what? Meaning I was going out to things. Excuse me, whether it was concerts, whether it was travelling to places for work as a journalist, as a producer, whether it was just going out, men began dressing more effeminately. Men were wearing man bags and skinny jeans were everywhere, and they still are. And at the time, I was extremely vocal in my criticism of this at the time. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I also couldn't believe. I was in canteens and I was out and about with friends, and I began to hear men talk about Sex in the City and Ally McBeal as good television shows. And I couldn't understand how any man could watch those programmes and not be bored witless by watching them. I knew you had men all the time talking about them and watching them. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Right? I'm not saying I was right back then. And I might have been looked upon as a Neanderthal, as a caveman type character. Maybe I was. Maybe I am. But to me, it made no sense to me. I was like, what the hell, you know? And what I see with children at the moment is I see the homogenisation of the sexes. I know it sounds ridiculous, and it's hard for a guy like me to find the vocabulary to put a substantial argument that, you know, a good argument to support my theory. But I believe that's the agenda. You know, boys, when I was a child growing up in Ballybeg in Waterford, which, despite what was going on domestically in my home, which was terrible, at least when I was out and about, Ballybeg was a great place to grow up. I was wonderful, proud to be from Ballybeg. It's a housing estate in Waterford City. Boys did boys' stuff and girls did girls' stuff. And I have a theory now. Again, I've got to repeat that I don't have the vocabulary. Vocabulary. Irony. I don't have the vocabulary to back this up. I wish I did. I don't have the training to back it up. But I have a theory that natural separation in playtime, when you're very young, is important biologically. Why? Because maybe the natural separation of the sexes when we are very young, maybe it's important, maybe it's linked to our attraction for the opposite sex when we get to our teens. I know that sounds mad, doesn't it? But it's honestly what I think. It's my theory and I'm claiming it. Boys running around with toy guns and hanging out of trees, climbing trees and wearing Superman costumes and kicking a ball and getting filthy, as I did when I was a boy. And girls doing their things, playing in the way that girls played when I was younger. Which, of course, young boys eyed with great suspicion. When you're a young boy, climbing trees, using tennis rackets as machine guns and kicking footballs, you do, as a very young boy, you eye with great suspicion what young girls are doing. And I somehow believe that this is vital in terms of the puberty process. It's vital. You know, messing with kids as they're doing at the moment, messing with millions of years of evolution, by making them play together, by insisting that boys and girls must be on the same teams in sports when they're very young now, interfering in what boys can and can't do, kind of forcing them together when they're very, very young. I wouldn't be surprised if that isn't impacting on sexual attraction, meaning that there might be less sexual attraction when the boy gets to 13, 14. Maybe less likely, because maybe the homogenisation of the sexes at the young ages demystifies, for the, I can only speak as a boy, maybe demystifies femininity when boys are young and vice versa. And that maybe has an impact then when they get to puberty. Or I could just be talking monumental bollocks, as usual. I'm well prepared for my theory to be absolutely shot to pieces. But that's what I see. Leave them alone. They're supposed to do their things when they are younger. The things that we see as, you know, male inclined or female inclined. And then as they get into their 10, 11, 12, 13, then they start to look at one another. They start to get a bit curious about that strange creature over there in the dress or in the skirt whom I was repulsed by when I was 6 or 7 or 8, maybe. I don't know. I think there's something to that anyway. Right. Going to turn our thoughts to the Holocaust industry. This is your Richie Allen Show, Sunday View, coming up for 13 minutes to midday as we are live.
Welcome back to the most listened...
And I wasn't supposed to do that. I was supposed to do this.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
I know there's probably a million holes in my theory, but anyway, look, it's out there. It's my theory. Came across this morning on the BBC, getting quite a bit of coverage today. Holocaust victims to be buried after remains given to museum. A funeral is to be held today for 6 unknown Auschwitz victims whose remains were donated to a British museum more than 20 years ago. Hundreds are expected to attend the service at Bushey New Cemetery, Hertfordshire, in the first service of its kind in the UK. It's the first one of its kind. The remains of 5 adults and at least 1 child were anonymously donated to the Imperial War Museum in 1997. The remains of the adults and at least 1 child anonymously donated to the Imperial War Museum in 1997. The identities of the victims will never be known.
What kind of fuckery is this?
So, hundreds are attending a funeral today for 6 people who allegedly were killed at Auschwitz, whose remains were donated anonymously to the Imperial War Museum in 1997, and the identities of the victims will never be known. Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph. Olivia Marks-Waldman is the Chief Executive of Holocaust Memorial Day. Yes, Chief Executive of Holocaust Memorial Day, which of course is a business. And Olivia Marks-Waldman was on Sky, prepared for, well, for silliness, really.
The remains of 6 unknown Holocaust victims, including a child, will be buried in North London today. The service will be the first of its kind in the UK.
Well, until now, their bodies have been stored in the archives of the Imperial War Museum. Well, let's talk to Olivia Marks-Waldman, Chief Executive of the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. Good to see you.
Morning.
How important is this today?
Well, I would say not very important at all. This is lunacy, isn't it? Do you know, they've admitted that the remains were among a large number of objects relating to the Holocaust given to the museum by an anonymous donor. Some guy anonymously gave a big box full of shite to a museum, said, by the way, those are the ashes of 6 people that I think might have died at Auschwitz, and they're going to have a funeral today with all pomp and circumstance in London. It's madness. They're burying what might not even be human remains. And they're all turning up. Lord Pickles is there. John Mann will probably be there. All the virtue signalers. Anyway, let's hear the answer from Olivia, from the Chief Executive of Holocaust Memorial Day. How important is it, Olivia?
It's a very rare and an extraordinary moment. So it has a huge significance. Obviously, significance to the individuals themselves who are denied a humane burial. Of course, their last moments were those of brutality. But it's also a significant moment for all of us in the UK as we have this opportunity to give them a burial.
What do we then make of the fact that we don't know about their origins particularly, do we? We know they were sent to the museum quite a number of years ago. Why has there been a decision?
We don't know anything about the origins. We know they were sent to the museum a few years ago, and they were sent anonymously, but Sky News decided to leave that bit of that nugget of information out of it. And Dixon is struggling with himself because there is 1% of him still left that is a journalist who wants to say, "Are you fucking mad, lass? What are you doing?"
And do you support it to sort of move them out of storage? It sounds a bit sort of grim in itself, but why has this happened?
I think they've appreciated that the more appropriate action to take is to give these remains a humane and decent and proper burial. And I applaud that decision. It's the right thing to do. And the Imperial War Museums, the Chief Rabbi's Office, the United Synagogue have all dealt with this so humanely and sensitively. And we're really delighted that this opportunity is now taking place for survivors themselves in this country and for so many more to be attending this funeral today.
And this will be a full funeral held according to Jewish rites today?
Correct, that's right. The overwhelming likelihood is that these ashes and remains are of Jewish individuals. We can't know that for sure, but it's the overwhelming likelihood. And so it's absolutely fitting that this funeral should be taking place.
Ah! I feel like Frank Grimes. Do you remember Frank Grimes went to work at the power plant in The Simpsons? And he just went insane because madness was being accepted as normalcy in the power plant. Lunatic behaviour was the norm. Bucket of ashes. Well, it's definitely Jewish. Got to be Jewish. Wow, we can't be sure whether we are burying Jews or that they were murdered or even that they were human, but fuck it, eh? Why waste an opportunity? Then we got a lovely bit of virtue signalling from Stephen Dixon, the host, because Stephen then gets to the nub of the matter. This is why we do things like this.
It is important for all of us. It brings our focus back onto the Holocaust, which...
It's fucking vital, because I managed to go 2 hours without thinking of the Holocaust. Thank Christ for this! Isn't it important that we keep our focus on the Holocaust, you know? I can't get through a football match of a Sunday afternoon without pausing for reflection on the Holocaust, and that's what it's about.
Which I think needs to be done, doesn't it? We need to remember what happened so that we don't repeat it.
How could you ever forget, for fuck's sake?
But what will it mean for those survivors? And we've had the privilege of meeting some Holocaust survivors in here on occasion, and it's overwhelming for us actually to talk to them. What will this mean to them?
It will mean an enormous...
It's overwhelming to talk to them.
...enormous amount to them. These ashes and remains in some ways represent their family members who never received a proper burial. So for so many survivors, it's hugely significant that they will be able to see a humane and dignified burial being accorded to the remains of these individuals.
Yep. Yeah, it's important that we never, ever, ever stop thinking about the Holocaust, ever. Even when you're having sex, even when you are on top of your missus, think about the Holocaust. Might help you last a bit longer, actually. Might be a good thing for men who suffer with premature ejaculation. Think of the Holocaust. Something that happened 80 years ago, and Jews were not the only people imprisoned and murdered. Genocide is not exclusive to Nazi Germany. And it wasn't a genocide anyhow, was it? In the purest definition of the word genocide. Jews are not a race, no more than Christians are. I've said that a million times, a million times. They're not a race. Anyhow, next week is Holocaust Memorial Day in the UK. Whoop-de-doo. What's happening, Olivia? Will there be a Ferris wheel, hot dog stand, a ghost train? Will there be a roller coaster there?
And of course, although it's a coincidence, it's very fitting that this is taking place just a week ahead of International Holocaust Memorial
Day. No coincidence whatsoever.
Memorial Day. And any viewers today who wish to pay their own respects can do so by attending a Holocaust Memorial Day event over the next couple of weeks.
And are those events taking place across the country?
Absolutely, all across the United Kingdom. We're expecting in the region of 11,000 such activities. So local councils and many more places will be doing that. And that's an opportunity for everyone in Britain to be thinking...
Shall we go to one, shall we? Shall we meet at one next week?
...as you've referenced... how significant this is for us to all learn what happened in the Holocaust and where prejudice and hostility can ultimately lead.
Indeed. Olivia, thank you so much.
Thanks, Olivia.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. That was lovely. It's an industry. She's the chief executive of a fucking industry, as Norman Finkelstein has dubbed it. And his mother and his aunt and his dad were at Auschwitz. And he knows Jews were murdered in Germany. Of course they were. Muslims are being murdered today in Syria, Iraq, Palestine, Afghanistan, Africa, Yemen. Yemen. No mention of it. No mention of it. This Holocaust shit is a mass brainwashing exercise. That's all it is. Jews today, listen and listen good. You are not the chosen people. You are white. 99% of you are white people. All you had in common with those misfortunates who were murdered in Germany was your belief in a couple of fictitious books. That's a fact. That's the fact. And this brainwashing, this Holocaust memorial crap, this we must never forget crap, this five films a year on television and in cinema about the Holocaust crap is really about whitewashing the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza today. Must never speak of the crimes of Israel. We must never speak about the crimes of Zionism. We must never talk about that. And they juxtapose Jews and Jewishness with the crimes of the Israeli government. And they are not compatible, believe it or not. Because there are millions of Jews around the world who have no time for it. And who do not support what goes on in Palestine today. This Holocaust thing is sickening. Sickening that it's rammed down your throat every day of the week while as you eat your dinner today the mass murder and genocide of people continues around the world, sponsored by the United States of America, France, Great Britain, and yes, sponsored by Israel too. 'Tis a madness. That's it for Sunday View. Speak again on the Richie Allen Show tomorrow, Monday at 5 p.m. UK time. Have a marvellous Sunday.